Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. It is March.
Yes.
Here we are.
And Dr. Mixon is here, but
yes.
Doing his best Samira Umat imitation is going to be Dr. Michael.
I don't think
Gilbert.
I can do so.
No.
I was going to try for a moment, and I decided it's just
it's not going to work.
I can sell it. No.
I don't think your vocal cords quite go that high.
No. We don't want to mess with his vocal cords. They're perfect way they are. Yes.
Samira, however, has a daughter who's graduating from Oxford.
Oh, wow.
This weekend. And so she is in Oxford, England for the graduation.
How exciting is that?
Whoa.
Yes.
Do you think she'll eat fish and chips? In England?
With vinegar.
With vinegar. In a newspaper wrapped something. Oh, I'll have to ask her.
You'll have to ask her when she gets back.
I'm sure that was her priority. No, that's exciting. Can't wait to hear about it when she gets back.
Yep. So, you know, she's having a good time. This is a overachieving daughter, obviously. All of her kids are overachieving.
Yes, they really are. You know.
But this one, you know, she actually started with a company here in the U.S. And she was such a stellar employee that the company sent her to Oxford at their expense to pick up an extra degree on condition that she comes back to the country or come back to the company. So,
okay.
Well, you know, nobody ever did that for me.
Yeah.
No.
No.
There was no line.
There was no way.
But there would be nowadays. Oh, yes.
Nowadays, maybe.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, this is Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here and Dr. Michael Gilbert.
Good morning.
Yes, from Northwest Vision. And we're going to talk eyes today. Well, this is the day that if you have questions about your eye health, we have Dr. Gilbert here to talk cataracts and dry eye, glaucoma. Oh, I'm speaking your language, aren't
I? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Speak eyes to me. And of course, whatever is ailing you with your health, Dr. Mixon.
What, am I ailing your health?
No. He is our longevity doctor.
That was the first thing that came to her mind.
Yeah.
No, actually, my wife showed me an interesting ophthalmology thing yesterday.
Wow.
Over breakfast. I looked at it, and my worried antennas came up. Apparently, this is a group down in Mexico that has got a laser that changes your brown eyes to blue. Apparently, it hits the pigment in the iris. And they takes a couple of therapies over a 2 month period, and then over the next 2 to 3 months, your brown in your iris goes away, allowing it to be blue.
Okay, that is crazy.
I don't know of an iris that can, or I'm sorry, a laser that can change the iris color.
Yeah.
But I think what they might be talking about is actually a femtosecond laser that creates a pocket in the cornea. And then the pigment is infused into that pocket, and it overlays the cornea. I saw one such patient just within the last 2 weeks. It's not done in the United States.
No.
He went to Mexico to have it done.
Yeah.
My jaw didn't drop, but mentally my jaw dropped.
Yes.
Because risk benefit. And he chose a color that from a distance looks kind of orange. I think he meant brown.
Uh-oh.
I see.
But from a distance, it has kind of an orange cast. So
you don't
miss the fact that he's had something done.
Okay.
Well, you know, my wife at Halloween has been known to wear red contact lenses.
Sure.
Just like the contact.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, that the interesting part of that, Jerry, is those are not FDA approved, and
yeah.
many of them are not sterile.
Yeah.
And they're bought in, you know,
online, yeah,
right?
Probably
and,
China.
And okay. and so the scary part of that is they're you know, increase in infections from such at a time when we've got over the counter eye drops that are being associated with infections, all of which, however, are internationally produced. Right?
Wow.
They're coming from coming from India and such like. So the watch where you're picking up stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Put in your eyes.
Wow, that's so crazy, because I had a dream last night anticipating that Dr. Gill, you were in my dream.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
Okay. Yes.
That's a little
scary.
That we
can talk about on the air?
That's a little scary.
Okay. It is, because he was giving me the choice of lenses. Of course, you've already
right.
put lenses
right.
in my eyes, but
I'm
I knew that he was
going
to be the guest. No, you had. I had a color choice
oh.
of green, brown, blue, or a violet like Liz Taylor, and I love brown eyes, so
yes.
I almost went with that, and I went with my green eyes.
Uh-huh.
So that's odd that we are talking about that. Ooh.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and there is another technology that's being used now is FDA approved. It's actually German. There is no U.S. manufacturer of an artificial iris,
wow.
and it's micro-thin polymer. They take a picture. This is usually for someone who has a defect, trauma, birth defect, something like that. But they take a picture of the eye you want to match. And they have artists who then
create
that color match. It's micro-thin and slides in to that anatomical space.
Huh.
Wow.
Had such a patient just within the last few weeks who had such an artificial iris.
Was his name Steve Austin? By any
but
chance.
But he didn't choose orange.
No, he didn't. Well, Steve Austin was the,
orange.
You know, had the bionic eye.
Yeah. And see, I never know what to answer when you're filling out a form and ask for eye color, because my eyes seem to change depending
yes.
on my surroundings and my shirt. Sometimes they are gray, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes they are perceived as blue, and sometimes they're perceived as green.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're kind of that indeterminate and
glassy blue gray is what I always think of you.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so I never really know what to write down. You know, I generally put gray just because it matches my hair.
Right.
Wow. Okay, well, the eyes have it today.
Wow.
Questions about eyes, eye health today. And Dr. Mixon here, of course, with your diagnoses, your symptoms, your questions about aging, and why is this happening to me? We would love to talk with you. Let me give you that phone number real quick, and then we'll find out if there's anything new in medical news that we should talk about. Here's the number to get through early on the show today and be with us. We are live, 800-465-8. 770. That's 465-8770. So that's the number to get through today on the show with your questions. Okay, so what's besides all the excitement going on, Dr. Mixon, what is new with medical news?
Well, you know, a whole lot of stuff actually with infectious disease.
Mm.
You know, we are getting a little bit of Zika, and we're having a burst of tuberculosis in the United States, primarily coming in across the southern border. And, you know, folks that are carriers, and of course, when they come in, they are not screened and are not given physical exams as though they were coming in legally.
Mm-hmm.
You just get to wander across and get on a bus or a plane and get shipped around the country if they promise to go back to a hearing in 3 to 5 years.
Honest.
Yes. And, of course, none of them will ever show up.
I know.
You know, because if they show up, then they get deported. And so, no, they're here, and they're going to stay, all 10 million of them so far in the last 3 years. And so, yes, they are bringing in infectious diseases that have been almost eradicated in the United States, but now are once more becoming a significant risk, which is really kind of sad. So we are seeing a real uptick in tuberculosis cases in this country.
And in our community.
Yes.
Right.
Wow.
Because not just abstract in the country, because it's a nationwide migration.
Because being shipped all over the country, yes. Yeah. And then once they're shipped to somewhere, they don't have to stay there. They, you know, can move on. Because if you get shipped into New Jersey, New Jersey doesn't want you.
No.
And so they put you on a bus, you know.
To Washington, D.C., and do they want them?
No, but they, no. But they're getting bussed off to, you know, then Nebraska and Iowa and those small towns can't take them, so they kick them off to somewhere else. You know, it reminded me when I was a country doctor in southern Idaho, in a little town called Preston. There were almost no homeless folk, but when one did show up in town, the city fathers put him on a bus to Salt Lake City. Mm. And Salt Lake City, you know, would buy him a ticket to Hawaii and say, go away.
Right.
What you do with an extra, you know, 2 to 4 million people every year, though, year after year, is kind of odd. We had 27,000 Chinese that we know of that came in illegally, and 270 some of them actually got deported, but the other 26,300 and some are here to stay.
Wow.
And oftentimes we'll be accessing social services for which
The Chinese, not so much. Most of them actually come with money, and you know, because this is the middle class, and they actually buy a plane ticket to Mexico, and then they get on a bus to Tijuana, and then they walk across the border, and they've got friends and relatives and people in a social setting here, and they often, you know, come with, you know, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in cash. Unlike most of the Central American, you know, folks that were making $1,000 a year before they came.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't worry about highly educated folks that have resources so much, but we don't need that many people to pick lettuce. We just don't.
Wow.
You know, I have nothing against immigration. I think, you know, you're married to an immigrant. I'm married to an immigrant.
We did it the right way. And
yeah,
everybody.
But I want to know who's coming.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what their qualifications are. I want to know what their expectations are. You know, I don't really want, you know, Hamas over here that are, you know, demanding we institute Sharia law. You know, we should have a right to know who's coming to our country.
Yeah.
And we should have a right to know whether or not they're carrying an infectious disease.
Medically screened is just, you know, seems like a minimum.
An absolute minimum.
Yeah.
And their history. You know, it would be nice to know whether they belong to a criminal gang and they've been in prison three times or not. You know. But of course, you know, if you've got that sort of history, you don't apply to the State Department. You apply to the drug cartels.
Oh, yeah.
They bring you right in because State
on a bus across the border.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Anyway, so yes, we are getting a surge in infectious diseases. Some of them things that we thought were pretty well wiped out, but you know, we even had a couple of cases of polio come in, which is kind of interesting. We thought we had that whipped right some time ago, but. Here we are, guys.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And Zika, I'm not as familiar with that one.
Well, Zika is an interesting virus. It especially hits pregnant women.
Okay.
Because it destroys the baby's brain.
Mm.
This is a virus that is a neurovirus. And in adults who get it, it often causes a mild encephalitis. Doesn't usually kill them. About 1 out of 4 die. But if there's a pregnancy while the virus is in the system, it does horrible things to the baby's brain.
Hmm. Okay. So. Wow. Well, California has a lot of folks leaving. I don't know if that would be a place to...
to what, to move in?
No, yeah, there might be a lot of room there with a lot of folks moving
Maybe, yeah. So, but somehow I got a feeling that they don't want you know, a million of our 10 million to California.
Wow.
So, anyway.
Okay, there you go. Medical update, what's going on in the news. And we're going to take a quick break here. And if you've got a question for Dr. Gilbert or Dr. Mixon, now is the time to call. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll take your call. Oh, look at that. Hello. As soon as I said, the phone lines jumped. We've already got several calls on the line. So we'll go to some calls as soon as we get back from this break. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
Living on love. Like an old-fashioned story.
I know.
Really?
Yes.
Living on love.
And we're back. We're talking eyes. We have Dr. Michael Gilbert here from Northwest Vision Institute. We have Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio and lots of callers very anxious to talk to both of you. Are you ready?
Well, one other comment, though. You mentioned a while back that you don't really need your glasses, but you wear them as a fashion statement.
I do.
And they
What do you think
fashion
of the cool ones today?
I know. I like these.
Thank you very much.
But, you know, I have some little cheap drugstore granny glasses that I use once in a while if the print is real small.
My self-image disallows me sliding on granny glasses.
Yes, I know.
It just...
I have some if you'd like to borrow my pink one.
Yeah. No, ma'am. Thank you. Okay. I'd sooner squint.
I keep this pair over here sitting.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think these are, what, $24 or something 5 years ago.
Exactly.
But the other day I put them on because I was reading a legal brief. And gosh, 27 pages of
wow.
And so I put the glasses on. Bandine came in the room and she said, "You know, you ought to start wearing glasses." She said, "Because they look good on you.
You look so distinguished."
She said, you look more studious when you wear glasses. Uh-huh. And so I said, "Well, I don't know, but maybe I'll stop by." Yeah, you know, Michael's place.
Yes, sir.
And pick myself out a nice, studious but fashionable set of frames, and just put plain glass in them.
Yeah,
just because the frames are so fun these days. So. There you go.
But we'll see. You may me see in your frame shop soon.
All right,
lots of fun there.
Got to keep the wife happy, you know.
There you go.
Good job. Well, let me know. I have my design person. Will meet you there.
Okay. Yes, and you'll get some cool glasses. All right, let's go to the phones. We're headed to Bothell, and we have Lori on the line. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning, Lori.
Morning, Lori.
Okay, well, then we'll go to Seattle with Michael.
Okay. Hello, Michael.
Good morning, Michael.
Oh, hello.
Sir.
Greetings.
Good morning.
Hi, Dr. Gilbert, I had a question. I'm a patient, by the way, very happy one. I had a curiosity question with summer coming up. I was thinking about sunglasses, and I've never paid that much attention to UV. I'm an old man like Dr. Mixon, 70.
We don't use the O word here.
So, no. A man of mature years.
Really. A man of significantly mature years.
Yeah. Right. He's I would aspire to be in his physical shape. In 2015, 8-9 years ago, I had regular cataracts in both eyes. It turned out great. And I was just going through my file, and the brand name was something. I'm looking at it. It means nothing to me. Alcon, ACRIQ.
Sure.
Okay, it's probably some standard. So whatever they put in worked great. But I was just looking at it, and I got a surprise. I was looking at the little labels they gave me, and it said UV with blue light filter. And I said, whoa, I never paid attention to that. Does that mean I don't need to worry about sunglasses in the summer or when driving?
Most of the implant technologies do have UV protection. However, the rest of your eyeball is going naked, so that implant is blocking UV light to the retina. Yay, that's good. That's protective for the retina. But just as you put sunscreen on your skin, the rest of your eye also can be damaged by UV light. Both, you know, there are growths over the surface of the eye from UV light and dry eyes, degenerative changes to the conjunctiva, the white part of the eye. So it's definitely still worthwhile wearing those sunglasses. What is important to understand is not... So what is important, though, is that UV light, you don't necessarily have to have, quote, sunglasses to block UV light, just as those implants are crystal clear but block ultraviolet light. You can have your regular glasses that have no tint. So the tint just blocks the visible light spectrum, whereas you can have either very dark or totally colorless lenses that have coatings that block the ultraviolet. So it's the ultraviolet that's the damaging rays. Those are the ones that you want to protect against, and that can be done either with dark sunglasses. And you can also have sunglasses that don't have UV. Now, by FDA requirement, they are supposed to in the United States. But I am certain that there are truckloads of sunglasses that come over from Asian countries where of manufacture that have not met specifications. So, you know, one of the things that we do, we have a meter to check and make sure that those lenses, whether they're tinted for to be, quote, sunglasses, or they're just UV-protected clear lenses, that they actually block UV.
So I could, when my next visit, I just bring in my glasses and you can put them in your machine?
You bet.
Okay, that's
awesome.
Great to know. Thank you. Very informative. Appreciate what you guys do. Bye-bye.
Of course. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
All right. Oh, that was very informative.
Whew.
I didn't know that. That's
your
good.
Implants protect you, but just
but
your retina.
Not my conjunctive,
right?
Whatever that
conjunctiva,
is.
Conjunctiva.
The
that's
white
right.
part.
Have
okay.
you ever heard of a pterygium?
No.
It comes from the word wing, P-T-E-R-Y, pterygium, like pterodactyl.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Wing. And it is that degenerative tissue. And as we get closer and closer to the equator, or people who spend a lot of time outdoors, farmers, fishermen, landscapers in the Northwest will have a lot of UV exposure, and that is a growth that starts in the periphery and can grow right across the eye.
Wow.
Sometimes people will come in and say, can you remove this because it's unsightly? But as you get closer to the equator, it actually grows right across the eye and blocks the vision.
So the answer to that is
one of those degenerative changes that suggest wear your sunglasses.
Okay.
Okay.
And you can't take that off, right?
No,
you can't.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Learning so much about the eyes today and more about your health. Here's the number to get through, 800-465-8770. And Lori, we lost you. Feel free to call back. We'd love to talk with you. Right now, headed to Ballard, and Ted is on the line. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Ted.
Morning. Morning, doctors and lady hostess. Can you all
I'm waving
me?
Back.
Yes, we hear you fine. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, first of all, I like your stance on immigration. You were spot on the immigration coming in this country. So my question is for Dr. Mixon. I'm 79 years of age, always in good health, ex-athlete, did a lot of sports. And it seems like as I get older, my cholesterol is kind of getting high. And I'll read just four or five items here. Cholesterol, I just had it done here about a month ago in Swedish hospital. Cholesterol, 222. Triglycerides, 102. HDL, 52. Ratio of HDL, 4.3. LDL direct, 149. Blood pressure is always very low, 110 over 70. Diabetic, never very low being diabetic. I'm not even close to being diabetic. 10-year risk, heart disease, 31.7. So there you have it. And then the doctor told me, he says, yeah, you're getting a little high. You were several years ago pretty low, but the rates are going up. And then he mentioned two items that I could be taking, but I don't think I want to take anything. One is
Rovastatin.
Right. And the other is Colchicine.
Okay. And Crestor, by the way. Crestor and Rovastatin. That's kind of the standard sort of approach to elevated cholesterols. Let me tell you a little bit about cholesterol. First of all, cholesterol is the mother hormone. You need cholesterol. Without it, you die very quickly. You need it for brain function. You need it for muscle function. You need it for just about every cell in your body. So cholesterol in and of itself is not bad. The problem is that the LDL cholesterol is pretty fragile. And it can be damaged by high sugars, by high insulin, by free radicals of any kind, by radiation, everything from X-ray techs to just cosmic rays whipping through the earth. And when LDL is damaged, our body perceives it as a foreign material and wants to get rid of it, because when it is damaged, it actually attracts inflammatory cells to it. And so you send out phagocytes, these white cells, that gobble it up. And they will gobble up so much damaged LDL that when you look at them under a microscope, they look like they're filled with foam. So we call them foam cells, oddly enough. But those foam cells then migrate to the wall of the artery and kind of get buried under the intima, under the lining of the artery. And they get deposited. We call that sequestering them. I always love it. The politicians pick up a medical term, you know, the sequester. And but they pile up there, and they form a plaque, a big wad of inflammatory cells, these now dead phagocytes. And if that pile of plaque ruptures through the intima, it then forms a sudden clot and shuts off the blood supply to part of your brain, in which case you've had a stroke, or to part of your heart, in which case you have a heart attack, or it flips out into your arm or your leg, in which case you get a peripheral occlusion. Mm-hmm. And so that's the danger, is the damaged LDL. Now, there's two ways to address that. One is you don't want to have much LDL. That means there's just less LDL available to be damaged. And the other is you keep your blood sugar and your free radical levels quite low, and then however much LDL you've got, it's not getting damaged. So you've got two different approaches there. But then the next step is how do we lower LDL cholesterol? Now, we're going to take a little break here. But everybody hang on, and we're going to talk about how we lower LDL cholesterol at Longevity Medical Clinic without the statins, the Crestor, etc.
Okay. We'll take a break, and we want you to stay right there, Ted. And Lori, we'll get to you, Adriana, Steve. Wow, we've got a bunch of them on the line this morning. We'll talk cholesterol and how to lower that right after this break. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine. It's Leading Edge Medicine talking with you today, and you can call in with your questions at 800-465-8770. And Dr. Mixon, you're talking with Ted about how longevity can help lower that cholesterol.
You know, we use statins once in a while. We get about 95% of our people, though, to get their cholesterols nice and low without the statins. But there's that other 5% that no matter how hard they work, no matter what we do, we still have to add the drug. So I'm not dissing the statins for when you need them. But you don't need them as often as most doctors seem to think. The problem is that because cholesterol is the substrate from which all of your steroid hormones are made. So pregnenolone, progesterone, dehydroepiandrosterone, estradiols, testosterone, cortisol, all of these are made out of cholesterol. And what happens is your body, your end organs, mostly your adrenals and your testicles in men and the adrenals and the ovaries in women, take up the cholesterol and turn it into their appropriate hormones. But as we age, those end organs, the women's ovaries and the men's testicles and the adrenal glands are all going downhill. And so they're not functioning as well as they should. And so your body recognizes that all of these hormones are declining. You're getting less and less of the hormones that you need to be strong and vital and active and have a great life. So what does it do? It says, hey, we need more pregnenolone, more testosterone, more dehydroepiandrosterone, and so on. So it says, let's ramp up the cholesterol. Let's ramp up the substrate and drive the reaction further. The problem is that even though the cholesterol comes up and there's now more substrate available, those end organs are just old and they're not working very well. So the body reacts by ramping it up a little more, but the end organs are still old. They don't get any younger. And so that's why cholesterol tends to rise with age. It is a natural response by a body to the failing hormone levels. On the other hand, if we give you back all the downstream stuff you need, if you've got enough pregnenolone and DHEA and cortisol and testosterone and estradiol and progesterone, etc., then all of a sudden, your body doesn't need to drive that substrate up so high. Now, simple lifestyle and dietary issues are sufficient to drive it, your cholesterol's down. Okay. So we generally start by giving you back all those hormones that are in decline, and that in and of itself makes it very easy to lower cholesterol without having to resort to medications that damp down cholesterol everywhere, including your brain and your muscles, which is why some people, when they take their statins, get fuzzy headed and memory problems and mood swings, or they get weak muscles, or they have trouble, you know, walking or jumping or climbing stairs, because the cholesterol metabolism in the muscles is necessary for good muscle function. And so those drugs don't just affect the liver, they affect the whole body. And so all of your cholesterol metabolism gets hit, which is why we prefer not to use those drugs unless we really, really need to, in which case we do.
Okay. All right. Is that helpful for you, Ted?
Yeah, except for one thing I could ask doctor. I understand everything. Sure. The only other thing on the panel that they did, about 30, 35 items, the only other one that they have down here that's high is RDW. What is that?
Oh, that's in your CBC, your red blood cells?
They have that down. They have that list of everything, and they just have RDW. They have it down. It's from 11.6 to 15.4, and mine is high at 17.4.
Not terribly excited by that. You do 30 tests on any human being, and something's going to be outside of the so-called normal range. Here's how those normal range are acquired, okay? They'll do the test on 1,000 people or 5,000 people. They find the statistical mean. Everything within two standard deviations of the mean is considered normal. The bottom 2.2 percentile are going to be abnormally low. The top 2.2 percentile are abnormally high. And in some people, that's just the way the good Lord made you. You just happen to have a little bit higher than the average. So not being normal doesn't mean you're sick, okay? So normal is grossly overrated. But when we see a lot of stuff outside of the normal range, then we start looking for why. But an isolated elevation that's only up by a few percent like that, I'm not all that concerned about it. So watch it next time you do the test and see if it's continuing to rise.
Okay. I thank you, doctors and lady. I appreciate it. until next time.
Okay. I'll
see you next time. Thanks a lot.
That sounds great.
Bye.
Thank you, Ted, for the call. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We're talking with Dr. Jerry Mixon and also our special guest doctor in the studio. If you have a question about your eyes and your eye health, Dr. Michael Gilbert is here. This is the day to call in about your eye concerns, glaucoma, cataracts. If you're wanting to do the lens exchange and have questions about that,
RLE.
Yes, this is the day to call in because Dr. Gilbert is here. 800-465-8770. All right. We have Lori on the line from Bothell. Lori, thank you for calling in. How can we help?
Well, I got disconnected, but that's okay. I'm back
We're
now.
We're glad you're back.
I know. Hi, everybody. Hi, Dr. Gilbert.
Good morning.
I am a patient of yours. Dr. Mixon, I called about a couple of weeks ago about my daughter. She went in and finally saw her surgeon for the cysts on her ovaries.
Uh-huh.
And it happened to be an endometrioma at 3.2, and she has another one on her other ovary that's smaller than that. And I wanted to know, they want to do a laparoscopic surgery, and I was wondering, how fast do you, if you know, do these grow?
Well, endometrioma is the endometrium that is the lining of the uterus that grows each month and then sloughs off to give you your period. And some of the endometrial tissue has gone out the tube and implanted on the ovary. And that's why we call it endometrioma. It's actually endometrial tissue. And because this tends to bleed, periodically, depending on what her hormone cycles are, you often get old blood and muck in there, and that's why it kind of gets walled off and you make a cyst. They grow each month, and then they're supposed to shrink some, and then they grow again, and they're supposed to shrink some. But over time, the fluid, if it's not fully reabsorbed in between, will just get bigger and bigger and bigger. So the good news is this is not difficult to remove. It's not a dangerous procedure. She should do just fine. They'll pop a couple of little tiny holes in her tummy and put the scope in one of the holes and put some instruments in through one or two other little holes so they can manipulate things and move them around. And, they'll zap those spots, either cook them or desiccate them, and they'll go away.
Okay.
Piece of cake.
Yeah, she wanted to do the surgery the end of, she was booked till the end of April, and I didn't know how long we should wait. And my daughter, she's freaking out. She's going, oh my God, when should I do this? And what are the complications and all this stuff? And I said, the surgeon is really good. She's at Evergreen. I said, everything sounded good the way she explained it. So should she go and make an appointment now, or
yes.
I suppose she
make the appointment
has no time then to wait?
If you've got something there, well, she's got time. It's not especially dangerous. It can be quite painful at times, though. So depending on her degree.
She doesn't have any symptoms.
Okay.
That's the weird
good.
Thing. She has no symptoms.
If she doesn't have symptoms, if she's not in discomfort, then, there's not a giant risk or a giant rush. Because as endometriomas, these are not cancers. They're not going to do her any serious harm.
Right.
The biggest problem is if one ruptures and releases that fluid into the peritoneal cavity, then you have a sudden instance of significant pain. But if she's pain-free, do it when it's convenient. It's not that big a deal.
Okay. And do they grow back once they are removed?
If you destroy all the tissue, then those won't grow back. But she has proven that she refluxes some endometrial tissue out her tubes. That's how it got there. And so she's done it before. She may do it again.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your information.
Uh-huh.
All right. Thank you for the call, Lori. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and we are taking your calls this morning at 800-465-8770. We are headed right over to San Antonio, Texas.
Wow.
Are you ready for some warm weather in beautiful San Antonio?
Yeah.
Adriana is calling us.
Stay away from the wildfires that parts of Texas are having.
Yes. Hi, Adriana. How are you?
Hello. Thank you. I'm very fine.
Well, how can we help him?
Okay. We just went to an appointment for my husband, and the doctor gave us a list of things we have to, vaccines we have to update.
Uh-huh.
We know we have to do the shingles, but I got allergies, and so we didn't do the shingle shots yet. So, we're traveling in mid-March. Is it okay to wait until after that to do the shingle shots?
Sure. Shingles is not a contagious disease. In other words, if you haven't had your shingle shot, you're not going to give anybody any problem. It's just a question of how well you want to protect yourself from shingles, because statistically, the older you are, the higher the risk that chickenpox virus that you accumulated when you were about 2 years old is going to start causing irritation of one of your nerve roots, because that's what shingles is.
Okay.
It's a reactivation of your childhood chickenpox virus that has been sitting in nerve roots his whole life. Okay? So don't worry about it.
Because I tend to overreact to things, so we don't want to have some big reaction before we leave town. Okay, so we'll do when we get back.
But now, out of curiosity, where are you traveling to?
Oh, just down to Donna, Texas.
So a short trip. Okay. Listen, hear the music. We've got to take a break, but just sit tight, and I'll get your next question when we get back, okay?
All right.
Okay.
Don't go away.
Stay right there, Adriana. And Steve will be with you in just a moment as well. We're going to take a quick break, and we're back with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert. You've got eye questions. This is the day to call in. The number to call is 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. My name is Lynette, here along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Michael Gilbert. And Dr. Mixon, you were talking with Adriana. She had another question for you.
Yes, you had a second question.
Mm-hmm.
How can we help?
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. We have to get our pneumonia 20 vaccination and a tetanus shot also.
Okay.
So we can do those two at the same time. Is that correct?
Yes, you can. Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay.
The little pneumococcus shot is an important thing for older people to have.
It's what?
It's important to get the pneumonia shot. So that is one, because pneumococcal pneumonia kills old folks. Yep.
Okay. And then he also said... and if the shingles shot good for 7 years, I did read something on CDC about that.
Yeah, it's good for a long time. You know, their FDA has said that it gives protection for 7 years. If you've got a decent immune system, it may be good for 20 years. We don't really know how long it's going to be good for any individual.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're on your program. We still get your supplements.
All right.
Okay, and then the last question, I'm sorry, is RSV. And it's something a seasonal virus that sounds like November, January.
Well, that's respiratory syncytial virus is what RSV stands for. Again, that's a virus that is very common in children. You've almost certainly had RSV at some point in your childhood. But what we found is as we age, our immunity to that virus tends to go down. And there's more of it around right now because during COVID, the kids were all locked up and didn't get RSV. And now when we put them all back in school, they're catching a lot of RSV again. And that just means us old grandparents are now exposed to more of it because we're around more kids that are exposed to it. Okay. So, but.
Yes, which we are.
If you're in good health, RSV is not likely to do you much harm. But, you know, if we have a vaccine, why not avoid the risk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is that something that has a reaction to it, like
a sore arm for a few days? About what most people get.
That's it.
Yeah.
Would we do that now when we do the pneumonia and tetanus, or wait?
You can. It's there's no contraindication. It just depends on how many shots you want to get at a time. And how sore you want your arm to be. You know, the higher the volume of needle sticks, the sore you're likely to be. That's really what it comes down to. All right?
Because we like to work out, so we don't want to interfere with that, too. Okay, so we'll space that out then. Thank you.
Okay.
That helps.
You're welcome, ma'am. All right, take care.
Great questions, Adriana. Thank you for that. Yeah. All right, headed to Kirkland. Steve is on the line.
Okay. Hello, Steve.
Okay. Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can indeed.
Oh, very good. Yeah, me and my twin brother, Bill, we had the Galleri test done. Pleased to say everything came back. No cancer detected. His reason for doing it was he had a spot of melanoma in situ removed last fall, and nothing came back on him, which we're encouraged by. In my case, I have enlarged prostate with a PSA of 4.9 and did it as follow-up. Dr. Ken at the Kirkland Clinic said that means you're very unlikely to have any aggressive prostate cancer. He said we cannot totally rule out the potential of low-level cancer cells in the prostate. It's been slowly going up for a few years. It was 3 years ago. It was 3.9. I did have a touch of prostatitis when I got the PSA done in January. What would be some considerations going forward with those results? And in my case, in my brother's case, for further evaluation and follow up.
Okay. Well, you know, prostatitis will give you a very rapid rise in PSA because the infection just results in increased metabolic activity in the tissue, and that's what PSA reflects. So a big prostate with moderate amount of activity or a smaller prostate with a lot of activity will both give you a rise in PSA. Since cancers tend to be metabolically very active, high PSA makes us look for prostate cancer. But, you know, just prostatitis is far more common than prostate cancer, especially in older men who have less frequent sexual activity. You know, the more frequently you are emptying out that prostate, the less likely you are to have a prostatitis, just because you're keeping it, you know, clean and fresh fluids in there instead of stagnant stuff. And interestingly, men who have sex four or five times a week have one-third as much prostate cancer as men who are celibate. So, sex good. Not only is it fun, it's good, healthy for your prostate. So you got to tell your spouse about that. Say, dear, you do want me healthy, don't you?
Right.
So, what else? No, the rest of it I think is pretty self-evident. So,
And what's interesting is they're already talking, well, we might want to refer you to urologists if we retest and find a PSA above four again, and already talking potential biopsy. That seems kind of aggressive to me. I've had two older friends who've had it done. Neither one had cancer, and they said, especially one of them, that it permanently damaged the nerve and their the quality of life. I really don't want to go that route unless I have to.
I agree. We don't normally kick people out for biopsies right away. What we normally do is kind of a stepped approach. If we see a rising PSA or a long-term elevated PSA, we send them off, or we collect a urine and a blood test, and we do a 4K analysis. This tests four different prostate kinases that give us a statistical probability of having a high-grade prostate cancer. If the 4K is low probability, then you're probably not going to have a prostate cancer. If we have something that's a little worrisome or indeterminate, then we send you out for an MRI of the prostate. If you go to a place that has a 3 Tesla MRI, this is the most powerful ones now, they can get very, very precise imaging of the prostate, and they can see prostate cancers as small as 2 millimeters in the prostate. So, you know, we say, first we send them off, we do the MRI. If we see something suspicious on the MRI, then we have them go biopsy that spot. Okay. Because if they're just doing what we call the random biopsies, they go in through your rectum and they poke usually about 12 large bore needle holes through your bowel down into the prostate. Wow. And it's impossible to really sterilize the bowel. That rectum has got a lot of bugs and bacteria. So there's always a risk that when you're doing those punctures down into the prostate to get the cores, that you may carry some bacteria with it and end up with an infection. So biopsies are good when necessary, but we don't want any unnecessary ones. So if your MRI is clear, we don't send you for a biopsy. And if MRI is worrisome, we send you for not just 12 random biopsies. We send you in for a biopsy, one puncture, hopefully, right down to hit that spot that looks suspicious. So that we're only taking a sample of the worrisome spot instead of randomly sampling the whole prostate. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Very good. Yeah, I've had a history at times of prostatitis. I had a groin injury. I was a kid and have bouts of it. And in the past, they would give me, you know, antibiotics, low-grade antibiotics, mm-hmm. to try to resolve it. But it's been some years since I've had the issue, so I was wondering why I had the problem. And that's generated the PSA test. And the doctor was just a little concerned. He said, I'm not overly worried, but we want to test it again in a few months and mm-hmm. when you roll the prostatitis and see where you're at. And then he mentioned, but you know, follow-up. But is this something that I'm considering becoming a patient in August? Mm-hmm. Is this something your clinic could follow up on?
We do it all the time.
These tests?
Yeah. We've got close to 1,000 older men, and so periodically we're going to see rising PSAs. So it's something we're used to working up a whole lot. Yeah.
Excellent. Right. Well, that answers my question. I got some good follow up, and I don't have to rush off and get a biopsy. I really don't really want unless I need it.
Nope. And like I said, I do the 4K, the kinase test, and then I do a MRI before I do a biopsy.
Yeah. So. Well, this was a doctor at the VA. They were very nice, but it just made me wonder if there were other things to consider. So there are, and I do intend to become a patient a little later this summer.
Well,
so
good.
Thank you so much for your information.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Very good, Steve. Thank you so much for the call.
You know, the lady that was talking down in Texas that was going to go somewhere.
Adriana.
Yeah, going somewhere else in Texas for her travel.
a big adventure.
Well, Texas is a big state.
Texas is a big state.
You know, you can travel.
In Europe, that would be
two or three countries.
Like going, right.
Yes. I mean, Texas is the size of most of Europe. You know, if you start in France, you go through Belgium and Luxembourg and down into Spain, you're still in Texas.
Right.
Yes.
So, you know.
Keep going.
But yeah, it's on my mind because I'm trying to figure out where to go this summer.
Oh.
You know, I've got, in fact, maybe, Michael, you and I will take off and go to
fantastic.
There you go.
you know, I'm.
Well.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife is. Our daughter is taking off to South Korea for 2 weeks for a school trip. And, you know, when I was a school trip, we went, you know, 30 miles from home. We didn't go to Korea for 2 weeks. But that's her school.
We went to Eastern Washington.
Yeah, we went to the Dixie Cup Factory.
Yeah.
Not as exciting.
So, we're trying to figure out what are we going to do while our daughter's gone. And then she's going to pick up Ivory in Korea and take her to China for a month.
Of course she is.
Oh.
Because they're going to be working with a fencing master there every day for a month to get her epee skills honed. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do while they're gone. And so I'm just looking at, you know, what kind of adventure does Dr. Mixon want to have while his wife and daughter are in China for a month?
That's right.
We'll see.
We may have to take some suggestions.
Texas may not race to the top of the list.
Yeah.
Texas doesn't race. I go to
not
Texas
in the summer.
I go to Texas on business all the time. Glenn Beck is down there. So.
There you go. We'll think of something fun. Hey, we'll be back with hour number two. And Peggy, we're going to take your calls in just a moment and find out what's new in eye health with Dr. Gilbert in just a moment. Stay right there.